Every true football fan knows that the NFL season truly begins after the Super Bowl champion has been crowned, and the Ringer NFL feed will keep you on top of all the news still happening around the league and heading into the 2024-25 season. I'm Sheil Kapadia, and every Monday and Friday, Ben Solak and I deliver sharp takes and debates on the draft, free agency, training camp, and beyond on Extra Point Taker.
And every Wednesday, we'll have Dual Threat, where Stephen Ruiz and yours truly, Nora Princiati, dive deep into all of the big offseason developments, with Ringer favorites Austin Gale and Lindsey Jones stopping by occasionally to share their expert football analysis.
Subscribe to the Ringer NFL Show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to follow the Ringer NFL on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X at Ringer NFL.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, it is the OSP Final Four preview, and we got a stacked preview. We got Nate Oates, the head coach of Alabama, joining the show, and he is going to do his best to break down first how he got here with this team and what he expects to see when he goes up against the Connecticut Huskies on Saturday night in Phoenix. It's going to be fun to talk to Coach Oates. Also, we're going to have Purdue legend Robbie Hummel join the show. He's going to break down his reaction, his initial catharsis when he saw his Purdue Boilermakers make it to the Final Four, the first one since 1980, and they got him on camera crying. So shout out to Robbie Hummel for being a good sport and for selling into the pageantry of it all. He's probably going to be in one shining moment because of that. So shout out to him. We got a fun show. We're going to do our best to break it all down. Again, we're not in the preview business or we're not in the prediction business. We are in the preview business. We're not in the predictions business, but we're going to have some great reactions as well. Live in Phoenix, we're going to be there at the Final Four. Last year, I had the flu, so I was not at the Final Four in Houston. So this is the first Final Four that we will be doing together as OSP, this iteration of OSP. So we're very excited to be there. Myself, Kyle, Kevin O'Connor is going to make a special appearance. So it's going to be a fun weekend. We got a fun preview here for you. So anything else, Kyle, before we get into today's episode?
It's that time of year, Tate. I mean, God, we are pulling guests. Look at that lineup. God, Ian Eagle a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Not only are we pulling guests, we're going to be in Phoenix, which means I'm going to be pulling picks. Shout out to FanDuel. I'm going to be throwing the farm on NC State to cover. Just kidding. But first,
Woody Durham.
Hey, thanks.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 2nd, and we are breaking down the Final Four. And joining us to help us break down the Final Four, he is a Purdue legend and going to be the most wanted man in Phoenix. He is the great Robbie Hummel. Robbie, good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, Tate. I'm sorry about Carolina. Tough pill to swallow, but they will be back. They will rise from this, just like Purdue has risen from the FDU ashes.
Yeah, Purdue is back, and they are following, the new calling card in sports right now, especially in college basketball, is you lose to a 16 seed. Everyone gets off the scent. They say that these guys are bums. Get them out of my face. And then the next year, you come back, and you make the Final Four. They have two more games to play. Virginia laid the blueprint out back in 2019. But first and foremost, your just reaction, generally speaking, is it excitement? Is it relief? Just when it finally hits you that Purdue's in the Final Four?
Just happiness, because I know kind of the history and the struggle. You know, we've been so close so many times. And for me personally, I think with the way it went down my junior year, where we had a team that was playing as well as anybody, we're 22-3, and we were rolling, had some really, really good wins on the road, had beaten a couple Final Four teams, you know, beat Michigan State on the road. They end up in the Final Four. We beat West Virginia at home. Deshaun Butler and those guys end up in the Final Four. You know, that team was good enough to make a run like this, but unfortunately I blew my knee out and we didn't get that opportunity. And you have the Isaac Haas elbow, and you have Purdue losing to Kansas State with Mitch Richmond after they beat him in the regular season back in the late 80s with some really good players on that team for Gene Katie. Glenn Robinson's team losing to Duke in the Elite Eight. Thanks a lot, Grant Hill.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are pretty good, but you know, you're so close so many times. And it's just one of those things where you finally get over the hump. You're right. If you can take the punishment of losing to a 16 seed, the gods will reward you, apparently, with Virginia and Purdue. So it's been a tough year for I'm sure the coaching staff and Matt Painter, and a tough year for those players, but it's really focused them. You could see they beat Gonzaga in the Sweet 16 game. And I was watching on the monitor, and they had Miles Colvin, one of their freshmen, go over and put the Purdue tag, like advancing them. You know, they do that on those boards. They didn't even celebrate. And in a way, I'm like, man, they are so locked in. But in another part of me, I'm like, well, I hope they win the next game, because if you didn't enjoy any wins on the way, that's kind of a sad way to go. But yeah, I think it shows the focus level, and even the focus level they had when Tennessee tied it at the 4-minute mark. And they just grinded through it. Lance Jones made a huge three, guarded Connect really well. And it was, to me, it was an iconic performance from Edie. 40 points, 16 rebounds to send your team to the Final Four for the first time since 1980, when another first-team All-American is going just berserk in the first half. You know, Connect was special, but Edie was just a little bit better. And Purdue was tough, and you match Tennessee's toughness. That's saying something, because Tennessee and Rick Barnes is a phenomenal coach. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of those guys that deserves to make the Final Four as well, and I hope he does.
Yeah,
but you know, it was a great game, and Purdue was really tough and made some timely shots, and Edie was special. So it was a heck of a game to see.
Yeah, it all started last year for me with Purdue. We went to the Wooden Award ceremony, myself and Kyle, and we get there and we're talking to Chris Acker, who's in charge of the Wooden stuff, and we're asking him about the candidates that are there. And he said, "You want to hear something crazy?" We're like, "Yeah, we'd love to hear something crazy." He's like, "Zach Edey's teammates are coming to this." Like, they asked specifically if his teammates could come. And I'm not talking about like the walk-ons coming. You got Mason Gillis, Fletcher Lawyer. Like, these are starters on a team that just lost to a 16 seed. Everyone's turned their back on them. And they're at the Wooden Award ceremony with Zach Edey, celebrating his individual accomplishment. Matt Painter's there as well. And, you know, you kind of just look to yourself and you look around and you say, that's a team that if they galvanize together after something like that, there's a special season ahead. And you and I had you back in January, and we talked about why this team is different. It does feel like that when that happened, this whole offseason and during the season has been one goal to get to this point. And when they do get to this point, Zach Edey, they finally put a microphone in front of his face. And I feel like he finally just let it out. You know, he's very mild-mannered. He's very kind of meek at times. But we finally saw, like, Zach Edey have some relief and just kind of say, like, you don't know what's in our heart. You don't know who we are. You don't know how tough we are. And he finally got to release that. I mean, I'm sure that was fun to watch. And you were there in person to see it.
Yeah, I saw the interview that CBS did, and that was, I'm sure, Chris Foreman's worst nightmare in this idea. Then I also saw a clip of him quoting Superbad. So all things are coming out for Zach. But man, I think people kind of forget, though, too. You know, you're talking about last year, and certainly this is not an excuse to lose to a 16 seed. It's only happened twice. I think it's become something where it shows that the gap with the way the three-point line has gone, the portal, and also the COVID fifth years, it's made it a different deal in terms of the 1-16 matchups. And again, not an excuse to lose that game, but Purdue was picked, I think, fifth in that season, last season. And you've got two starting guards that are freshmen, starting point guard's a freshman. Fletcher Lawyer's a freshman. And they, I mean, they overachieved. Like they win the Big Ten by three games and get a one seed. And it was probably they were a year too early. And again, not an excuse to lose, but this was the year that you build for. You get Edie back. Those guys become sophomores. Braden Smith takes as big of a jump as just about probably anybody in college basketball. You add Lance Jones, who brings a real swagger and athleticism, and he's made shots this year. And
The timely shot he makes. I feel like
Tennessee.
Lance Jones, every time you're like, we need that shot. I mean, it's
but he doesn't
him
fear the
Lawyer.
Moment, you know? Right. Like he does not fear that. I thought Fletcher Lawyer's defense against Tennessee was really good because there's been times this year where people have maybe asked, well, if he's not making shots, which he went through a drought late in the year, can you keep him on the floor? But I thought his off-the-ball defense was really pretty good against the Volunteers. And the way that Purdue's guards got those drives, you know, when you've got a big like Edie rolling to the rim, that's impactful. And those Tennessee guys were so concerned about getting back to Edie that Purdue got multiple layups to kind of soften Tennessee's pick and roll defense in that first half. So just a really cool story. And Virginia set the blueprint. And I said it earlier, but man, if you can just take the loss, you'll get back.
Yeah, you just
you're guaranteed to go to the Final Four. So,
yeah, swallow the pill. Everybody come back. Virginia went on a kayaking trip. You guys went to the Wooden Award ceremony. You just got to have some sort of
everyone will crush
experience.
You. Everyone will crush you for like 6 months. But hey, it will work out apparently.
Let's talk about Zach Edey and the Zach Edey discourse because he is crushing everybody, and it has become almost a joke at this point. I laugh at it because it has become almost ridiculous where you can't even watch Zach Edey without like this whole, think piece that is behind it. And you got people that are like, this guy's a foul merchant, this guy's this guy's that. But at the end of the day, we're all watching Zach Edey dominate. He probably played his best game against Tennessee, which is also great for him. His career high, 40 points. We talked about the relief factor of it all. Just trying to get people to understand how dominant he is. Like, how much of a chore is that? And do you feel like, it does feel like it's almost like Purdue fans are having to argue their case, even though the results are right there in front of our face. I mean, is it frustrating or you just kind of let it roll off your back a little bit?
No, it's definitely frustrating. You know, I've played with a lot of seven-footers. High school, college, pro. Just because you're 7 foot doesn't mean you're good. I've played with a lot of 7 footers that suck. And
we
seven
all
footers.
Have that big kid that sucks in your high school. That you're like, I wish this guy had better hands. I wish he had better touch.
Right. And a lot of 7 footers that don't like basketball. You know, they play because they're tall and they're made to play. And then they're like, well, I'm big and I just have to do this. So just because you're 7 foot doesn't mean you're going to average 26 and 13. In fact, I've met a lot of guys that are 7 foot that average 2 and 1. And, you know, this dude plays 39 minutes and 30 seconds against Tennessee. And the way that he moves, he rebounds outside of his area. He makes multiple efforts defensively. He protects the rim. He's smart about when he goes and contests shots. Like, are there missed calls? Yes. Yes, there are. Both ways, though. He gets fouled all the time. Like, watch. And it was funny to me in the Tennessee game. Toby Awaka, for an entire possession, is defending him. And he's
with
got
his arm.
Two hands. Yeah, he's got two hands into his side. And for whatever reason, the refs don't call it initially. They called it after 15 seconds of it. And I'm like, well, that's been a foul for 15 consecutive seconds. And then you could see the ref went and explained to him, and it's about the arm bar, and that's what he went to. And Awaka is really strong, and at 6'8", he can kind of get underneath him and leverage it. But I just am blown away that the 3 seconds misunderstanding of what the college rule is hilarious to me.
Well, best things that he does, right, is that he relocates.
He clears.
And he gets out of the lane and then gets back
out,
in and resets.
All you
got
to do is
right.
get 1 foot out, lift the other. That's the college rule. That's what it is in college. He does that. And the thing also is, when you're 7'4", 300, and you're really strong, and you're really good, how do you think guys are going to have to guard him? It's like when I used to guard Zach Randolph. Mm-hmm. What do you think I was doing? I was putting max effort into not let, and then I'd have to foul him. Like, no one complained when that was the case. They're like, well, Zach Randolph is way stronger and way better and way bigger. Well, that's what this is. He's way better, way bigger, way stronger. So you have to foul him. I will say in the Gonzaga game, I thought he should have had 2 fouls in the first half. He tackled Ryan Nemhard on an offensive rebound, and then I thought he also fouled Anton Watson on a dribble drive. And those are probably the calls where Mark Few's like, man, you have to call those. That changes the way that this game is going to go. But with that being said, I've always felt like the star players are going to get a better whistle. Like Evan Turner got a better whistle. And you look at like, you
and
know,
that's
guys,
how it works at every level of basketball.
It is. The best, right. But the best players are also putting the most pressure on the defense. And when you put pressure on the defense, whether it's with the dribble drive or it's by posting up or whatever it is that you do, you are going to get a favorable whistle because you are the aggressor. Edie's the aggressor. And I felt that way about Evan Turner. I felt that way about Jared Sullinger. I felt that way about Kalen Lucas. I felt that way. You know, name a great player. Mm-hmm. They put pressure on the defense and the refs to make calls. And for whatever reason with Zach, that's not okay. I don't know if it's because he's so much bigger than everybody else, but some of the narratives that are thrown around, he's just tall. Man, you're an idiot if you think he's just tall. You are you have no idea what you're talking about, if that's really what you believe. But also some people you see and they'll say this stuff.
It's like, just to get a rise out of people, right?
Is it just to get clicks?
Right.
Is that what it's for? Is that what we've become? Mm-hmm. Maybe. You know, I don't understand. I think that for other people, you know, you play the way that you play and it's okay. I don't know. I don't get why for Edie it's become, well, he's just getting a great whistle. I mean, I've played with a lot of 7-footers that just weren't very good. So that's what I come back to.
He's got great body control. And I talked about this on our last show. The two things that he has that are elite are the rim pressure that he presents and the ref pressure that he presents. Because like you said, there's a foul probably on every play, either on him or like, you know, on the other end where it's like he's trying to clear space. So do you want to call it every single possession? And if you're the officials, it puts a lot of pressure on you to try to officiate him. And you have to officiate him differently because he's got guys that are just trying to bump him. And when you bump Shaq or you bump Yao Ming or you bump Zach Edey, you don't necessarily get the reverberation that you do if you bump someone regular. Right. And do you want Zach Edey like flailing his arms and flopping to get fouls? No, you don't want that either. So it's a very like nuanced conversation, but I feel like it's almost turned into like a joke and it's taking away from the reality of the fact that this guy is dominating college basketball at the highest level.
I think I wrote it down for the Tennessee game, it was like over the last 9 games, he was averaging 27 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
Those are incredible numbers. And like, he's being mentioned in statistics with Patrick Ewing, Shaq, Ralph Sampson, Bill Walton, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Again, a lot of 7-footers have played and they're not that productive. So like, you've got to appreciate his greatness because he's being named amongst players that have done special things, and Zach is doing special things as well. You know, he really is. And it's sad to me to see some of this. I feel like I would love to go back and watch the Tennessee game and do like a live stream. Let's go over the fouls. Let's watch the game and we'll go and let's bring an official in. Bring in Gene Steratore. let's go over this and we'll talk about it. I've seen Ant Wright do like dissections of games. It was the Northwestern game and I love Chris Collins, but if you come out and you say, hey, we've got 15 fouls amongst our three centers, we're going to use them all. And then you get mad when your three centers are in foul
trouble.
When
they all have four fouls. Yeah.
I'm like, well, you literally said that, you know, and that's how you have to guard him. You know, what else is Blake Preston going to do? He's like 6'9". You know, he played at Liberty last year, and now he's playing against Edie. Like, what do you think is going to happen? Mm. And, you know, I get that you got to go to bat for your team. I understand that. But that some of the things that have just been drawn up are funny. And I also think that if you played with like a 7-footer back in the day and you liked it then, but you don't like it now, that doesn't make sense to me either. It was okay but it's not cool now.
Yeah, it's on you at that point. And I do want to give Braden Smith his credit as well. Last year, he had 7 turnovers against FDU. You talked about him being a freshman. This year, he has been tough as shit. And he has made some incredible entry passes to Zach Edey. They have a nice little two-man game that they got going. And Edey, by the way, has gotten so much better going over the right shoulder. I feel like a lot of people are trying to get him to go over that.
The counters in the Tennessee game. Up and under on one move, left hook multiple times against JP Estrella.
Yeah.
High level.
That- That's what I was saying to myself, Zach Edey. Tip my cap to you. You've obviously been able to adjust in real time and get better in real time. So you have to give him the credit. One last thing on Purdue. I do want to talk about this. Coach Painter, you're there calling for Westwood One. You're doing the radio call. But Coach Painter, you go over, you tell him congratulations, and the emotions kind of hit both you guys. What was that like to be with Coach Payne in that moment? Because you could tell that he finally got a little bit of relief himself.
Well, it's a little embarrassing at how much
it sucks when you got cameras on you, right?
All the time. I looked up and I was like, oh God, there's like 20 people all with cameras and phones. This is
they're trying to just put this moment out.
I blame assistant coach Paul Luss, though, and director of basketball ops Elliot Bloom, who both were there. Paul Luss recruited me with Coach Payne, and Bloom was there for the entirety of my time at Purdue. And they softened me up by coming over and giving me a hug. So that was like hard. And then, you know, there's so much emotion because of my situation with the knee and our team that wanted
badly. You guys were kind of owed one, right? I mean, not to say that, you know what I mean? But like in the back of your mind, you kind of think to yourself, like, the basketball gods owe us one.
This has got to eventually happen, right? Like we've had so many close calls. That's where Isaac Haas broke his elbow up in Detroit. You know, that's where the godforsaken hook and hold started. So we that was in Detroit, and this was in Detroit, and then Coach Painter came over, and the things he said were so nice, and they were also like hard to hear while also being on a microphone to a national audience. You know, he says the things that he does, and I have the utmost respect for Matt Painter. I mean, he's a great person. He's a great coach. Now he finally gets his dues, probably nationally, because you've gotten to the Final Four. And that's what you know, that's the standard that's been set. You're not an elite coach until you make it. Does he change at all? No. He's still the same guy. But, you know, you watch what they run. You watch the way players develop there. You see the way he identifies talent. All of it is at the highest level. And I'm so happy for him because he deserves this moment. And, you know, hearing him say that stuff was really hard. But I'm really proud that he is our coach at Purdue. And, you know, you see just the job he's done year in and year out, and, you know, to play for him early on and see his evolution has been really cool. Sometimes he's too nice to the players now, I think, but that's the way that the game has gone. So, he's phenomenal, and I'm so happy for him. I'm so happy for the players. I'm so happy for the fans. It's been a long time coming for Purdue, and, you know, to see them, and it's not like they had a cakewalk. Gonzaga's playing great. Tennessee is a really, really good team.
And teams they played before, by the way, which also is tough. When someone's already seen you before, and they've seen you in Maui at a neutral site before, they have a lot of advantages. I've seen a lot of people talk about, well, they set up the bracket perfectly for Purdue to make a run.
No,
it's like,
I mean, you gotta
Gonzaga's
beat
better than
time.
What they saw in November. They have a front court. Like, they had a guard.
And you don't have the wow factor of Edey. Mm-hmm. You know, I always felt like this in the NBA. When you would see Kevin Garnett, and he's listed at 6'11", then you walk up to him, you're like, this dude's like 7'1". Or Durant is the perfect example. List him at 6'9". Man, that dude's 7 foot tall. And you can only underlist yourself if you're actually tall. Mm-hmm. The rest of us are like, man, I'm 6'9". And I'm like 6'7¾" barefoot. You know, I'm 6'8" in shoes. But everyone else is trying to add the height. If you're actually tall, you underlist yourself because it's an intimidation factor, right? Like that's a real thing. And but you can't do it unless you're actually big.
Yeah. And Zach Edey is, so you can say 7'1", 7'2", and then he shows
that's
up.
That's what he should
7'4".
Do. And then you see him and you're blown away by his size. That's what he should do.
That would be good. Let's talk about these matchups in the Final Four. We're going to both be in Phoenix. I know you're going to be pulled all over the place with all the Purdue people that are going to be there.
Our golf is probably going to have to be on hiatus.
We're going to play golf again on the other side. But you got to work now, and you got to make sure all the people, you got to kiss the babies, the Purdue babies that are there in person. Right. You're like face of the program. But we got NC State, the Cinderella, DJ Burns taking on Zach Edey. Obviously, this is going to be a fun matchup. I just want to general thoughts on this matchup. Are you worried going up against a Cinderella? These schools are very similar as far as their fan bases, you know, both engineering, architecture schools, things like that. Do you like the matchup, and what do you think about Burns versus Edey?
Well, I think you always look at a team that's playing this well, it's won 9 straight games, and you have to think, like, man, they're kind of playing like a team of destiny here.
It's kind of scary, right?
Yeah, they've won 5 games in 5 days. They've won 4 games in the NCAA tournament. So to win nine straight is truly amazing, especially with who they've played. I mean, they beat Duke, they beat Carolina, they beat, you know, all these teams that are really good. You beat Oakland, who's another team that can be terrifying with the way that they shot the basketball against Kentucky. DJ Burns is certainly the guy in the matchup to watch. I'm fascinated by how Purdue guards him. You know, mm-hmm. is it just Edie straight up? Or we've seen Purdue a lot with teams that have fours that don't shoot it great. And I think Diarra, with his 33% three-point percentage and his lower volume, it wouldn't surprise me to see Purdue go Trey Kaufman-Wren on Burns, and then they just kind of sink Edie and double. That wouldn't shock me.
Like have Edie kind of float a little bit in the paint.
Yes. Now, the thing is, you've got to get back to Diarra because he can really rebound. And then mm-hmm. the offensive glass would be a problem. And NC State has shot it way better in this nine-game winning streak. So you got to worry about if you are doubling like that, if you can get it out, you know, and Burns is a terrific passer. If you can skip that to guys like DJ Horn and Michael O'Connell, you know, Casey Marcel's not shot a great percentage, but he's made some here in the tournament. Then you could burn the double. So I'm fascinated to see the way that Purdue guards it. But NC State's defensive numbers are so much better in this nine-game winning streak. And you're looking at their numbers on the year. You look at KenPom and you look at just kind of what they've done. They're just kind of middle of the road, even like lower tier in the ACC with a lot of what their stats are. But it's a different story. And I was reading DJ Burns saying about how, man, we're just doing the little things. Nobody's late to meetings anymore. Everybody's together on the same page. Everything has changed at how our approach has kind of been. I guess you're like, man, why didn't you do this earlier? why didn't you do that in January? But hey, at least you figured it out eventually. And they are a tremendous story. I think the fact that you only play seven guys has to be terrifying against Edie. You know, if Burns gets in foul trouble, you got Middlebrooks at 6'10", but behind him, we saw it with Tennessee, and it can happen in a hurry. At the 6 minute mark in the Purdue Tennessee game, we were talking about coming out of break. Man, Tennessee's in pretty good shape. A lot of guys have one foul, but nobody with two. And then by halftime, Adu, two fouls. Awaka, two fouls. Meshack, two fouls. Those guys, they just, and a couple of them were dumb. You don't have fouls to give against Purdue, especially as a front court player. So that has to be a concern of Kevin Keats. But yeah, it's going to be. It's going to be really interesting to see because they are playing great basketball.
Yeah, DJ Burns, there's this folly where you double him and you think that's a good decision. And I feel like teams are slowly figuring it out that when you double him, it almost gives him power. When you got, I mean, yeah. I feel like Michael O'Connell is shooting 100% from three right now.
Dude,
I mean,
the way that he's become a scorer, the way that he's looked for his offense more, Stanford definitely more of a pass first point guard. And even, you know, this year, he's been, and he's made huge shots. Mm-hmm. He's got an and one against Marquette, massive play. Banks the three against Virginia in the ACC tournament. He's made some big ones end of the game. He's been a big part of this as well.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, KenPom, they're number 43, number 40 offense, number 45 defense. There's no wow factor.
Yeah, they're just kind of like middling. They're middling in a lot of things, right?
Right, finished 10th in the ACC. But all of a sudden, DJ Burns, the magic is there. And I think that's going to be a fun matchup between those two bigs. And Purdue, like you said, if they play their game, they don't turn the ball over, they can get these guys in foul trouble. I mean, even Ben Gregg was a perfect example of that. He gets two early fouls right before half. You're saying, if he can just get into halftime with two, he gets his third foul and everything kind of goes sideways from there.
Yeah, I'm surprised they had him on the court. But that's also one of those where, man, as a player, you got to know, all right, give up the two, but don't compound your mistake and take yourself out to where now you're not going to be able to start the second half.
But it's hard in the moment in real time to kind of, you know, keep yourself away from someone when your natural reaction is
well, you're emotionally
right.
drunk, right? Yes. Like you're emotionally drunk on the game and you make a play like that.
And you're just like saying to yourself, this is the one play that can turn the game around. This is our one shot.
I'll block him. We'll run the floor and I'll get a dunk to finish the first
exactly.
half.
Right? Everyone's got the best case scenario.
The delusions of grandeur are in their mind is what it is.
Right. Let's talk about some delusions. This is going to be a matchup that is going to have Connecticut fans acting delusional if it doesn't go their way. They feel like they are going back to back. They are in Phoenix. Dan Hurley, one of the most superstitious sickos you'll ever see. Some of the stuff that they've been been talking about is insane. They're going up against this Alabama team who is playing really good basketball right now with Mark Sears. What do you see in this matchup? And what do you think about a line being an 11.5, Robbie Hummel, in the Final Four? I think that's insane. But you really have to handicap UConn that way.
For sure. And that speaks to how well they played. I mean, you beat Illinois by 30 points and go on a 30-0 run. And Illinois' offense this year, I mean, you're talking about the second or third best in terms of offensive efficiency team in college basketball.
Right. It was number one versus number two, and it looked like a large gap between one and two.
They weren't that close, right? That was a statement-type game. I felt like, in watching, that UConn was doing the 11-man fast break drill all the time. That's what it looked like, where they just, you know, whether it's turnovers or off the defensive glass, they were out and running, man. They're good. The way that they execute on both ends. Danny Hurley has done a phenomenal job at what they do. Alabama, I think, is going to try to take 53s. I think they're going to try to set the record for three-point field goals attempted. but they play that analytics, and Nate Oates is a firm believer. And I think that that's a big part of it. You can't just be like half in on like, all right, we're going to do this. You got to be all in. And he is all in. And in talking to him, I've done 3 Bama games this year, 2 in the tournament, 1 in Toronto against Purdue. It was funny to talk to him about Aaron Estrada, because he's the one guy that has kind of like taken some mid-range. And before the tournament, Turner sends out these synergy reports on the games. And they've got a really cool shot chart. They've got a really cool shot chart of what the team's offensive and defensive profiles are. And it was Bama Charleston. They were like literally looking at the Ferrari version of it and probably the, you know, like Camaro version of it, you know, like, because that's what they were. Alabama's that version with the superior athletes and players and talent, and Charleston's doing the same thing with a little bit lesser, still really good players, but not quite to the level of Bama. And I think the report said that Alabama had taken like 12 or 14 mid-range shots from the top of the key on the season. You've got like 1,000 shots in the paint. You got like 1,500 threes around the arc, and you had like 12 top of the key mid-range, 16 from the wing, 8 from the corner. Like, you have no mid-range. They are all in on it, and they're all in on pace. Mark Sears is a stud. He is a problem. They're going to have to guard a million pick and rolls on him. Estrada as well, same thing. Latrell Reitzel's health will be interesting. He's had multiple.
I think he's going to play. I mean, I know he didn't practice the other day, but just based on everything Oates has been saying, I feel like he's going to play.
I mean, because he guards. He guards. Mm-hmm. He can make a shot. He shoots a good percentage from three. He's got size. He's got physicality. That would be a big addition. They struggled end of the year. I think a lot of it was, well, Rylan Griffin has this calf injury, and Latrell Reitzel's got a concussion. So their defense has been better. They really guarded Charleston, and they certainly have done a great job advancing in this NCAA tournament. So, that's going to be fascinating. UConn is a well-oiled machine. I don't want to undersell, you know, we've talked a lot about Bama, but the way that they've identified talent, whether that's Cam Spencer in the portal or getting Tristan Newton in the portal a couple years ago, Caravan is a stud at his role. Watch the offensive actions that UConn runs. They're elite. They are elite at what they do. And Klingon is a problem in so many ways. Steph Castle is a great, you know, for a role guy, that's a pretty talented role player.
Isn't it crazy?
He's got
though,
some ability there.
When you just think about these matchups here, and these, you know, it's Mark Sears from Ohio. When I see Mark Sears, I think of Mark Sears, you know, playing for Jeff Bowles at Ohio with Ben Vanderplas playing behind Jason Preston. Got Estrada from Hofstra, right? I mean, and then you look at UConn, you got Loyola Maryland's Cam Spencer. You got, you know, ECU's Tristan Newton, right? And it's like these guys that, you know, kind of bumped up from the lower level or mid-major, whatever you want to call it. Now they're playing at the highest level. And I do find that fascinating. I think Sears is the one that is really impressed me throughout the tournament, because during the season he was taking about 6 threes a game, shooting about 43%. Now he's taking 10 threes a game in the tournament, shooting 45%. And you talked about that variance. It does feel like they're just like, run the numbers up, keep taking open threes. We're gonna see if everybody wants to score with us and run with us. And Carolina fell into the trap, which is maybe the first time in my life I've ever seen a team play Carolina, and they wanted to run with Carolina. Right. They wanted Carolina to run, and the best thing Carolina could do was slow it down. Yeah, right. Yeah, the best thing to do against Alabama is to slow it down. And I'm worried that if you do try to play their game and Nate Oates gets you to play their game, then UConn could be playing a dangerous game. And that's why I think this could be the one game that threatens them.
I also feel like UConn is okay with getting out and playing fast. Even though they're so good in the half court, what they did to Illinois, my goodness. I mean, that was just like fast break after fast break after fast break. They can play in a lot of ways. And the way they guard, too, I mean, they're just super well coached. And I love that Danny Hurley is just like anything he can hear that's a tiny slight. You know, poor Sean Harrington said that they hadn't seen anybody like Shannon. And like Shannon is a problem in transition. Dude's like 6'6", 225. He's like college LeBron, right? Like that's what he's been this year. He's been the best player, leads the country in fast break points individually. And Danny Hurley heard that and took super offense. And maybe he'll take super offense to this. I appreciate what he did. He'll find something, no doubt.
He said that if they were Kansas, Duke, or Carolina, that they would be talked about a lot differently. I don't know how they could be talked about differently.
Do you think some of it, Tate, is that the Big East left ESPN? Mm-hmm. And when you leave ESPN, and the Big Ten has experienced this year, I think some too. Now, the Big Ten's different because Scott Van Pelt went to Maryland, and Maryland being in the Big Ten, I feel like he, because of that, covers the Big Ten more than what, per se, SportsCenter would do.
Yeah.
But think about the way the Big East was covered when ESPN was doing all their games versus now. I think that might be where he's feeling that, because you're not going to see Big East highlights on SportsCenter. You're going to see them on like FS1.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense to me either that you can have a 1 seed, a 2 seed, and a 3 seed and nobody else. Like the math does not add up where it's like you guys are good enough to be able to have a 1, 2, and a 3, but nobody else from your conference, even though teams in your conference beat you guys. And I mean, you know, Seton Hall, for example, beating UConn, if UConn does go and repeat and they blow everybody out by double digits again, it'll probably look even more insane. But I think you're right. The coverage always hurts. And I think, you know, it's not FS1's fault. It's not anybody else's fault, but just the general fan, when they put on sports, they put on ESPN, we're all conditioned. Yeah. And if you're ESPN, you got to show SEC. I mean, that's what it is.
That's true. ESPN's ACC, SEC. And then the Van Pelt factor of ESPN. Did you see Seton Hall's NIT game? I just thought they always played at the Prudential Center. They played in a gym that looked like my middle school gym. And look, Indiana is known for big gyms. Whether that's middle school, high school, that's our thing. We have big gymnasiums for even.
I've seen them. They're everywhere. You know, you just drive around Indiana. But there's nothing, and then just a huge arena.
I was shocked at the gym that Seton, but they filled it. Would you rather have 1,000 people, you know, to play in front of in a 1,000-seat arena, or would you rather play in the Prudential Center that's probably seats, what, 16,000, 15,000, and have nobody there? That would not, you know, it's smart. You're better off. It's like Penn State playing Illinois in that small gym on campus versus the Bryce Jordan Center. Way better atmosphere.
Yeah, Carolina did that when they were in the NIT in 2010. You know, they won in 2009.
They played in the old gym.
They played at Carmichael. Yeah,
that's sweet. Like, that's smart.
Yeah, it was great.
It's really
smart. It's a good thing. One last thing in the Final Four, and then I'll let you go, Robbie. Shooting in domes, you're a shooter. The depth perception, we hear this every single year, how hard it is to shoot in these football arenas. How much of a factor is that, and how much can you kind of, you know, anticipate that and get ahead of it if you are a shooter, or does it happen in real time?
It's funny you ask. So we played in the Sweet 16 in Glendale against UConn. So same building that we're going to be in for this Final Four. And the way they set it up then is much different than what they're going to do now. They've gotten really good at putting these things in the middle and building. So like let's say that the floor will be at the 50-yard line, the middle, like the center court will be there, and they'll build out the chairs. They'll put it on like a stage, and they'll build out the chairs around it. Whereas when we played there in 09, they put us in an end zone. So if you're thinking about the way the football field is, they laid the court vertically in the end zone, brought in, I'd say, 20 rows of portable bleachers. And then it was 175 yards of empty space to the other side.
That was the Caitlin Clark game at Iowa. That's what they did on the football field. They put it in one end zone.
They bring you into the end zone. That is hard. You're shooting out of that corner. The one corner is normal because you've got the regular bleachers of the end zone is right there. But then the other side of it, man, you've got all that
150
empty space,
yards.
Maybe more because you've got all the bleachers too. You might have 250 yards of empty space where you're looking at this and in warmups, you're shooting air balls and you're like, man, this is really, really weird. I think it's better with the middle of the field is better because you at least have some reference points and it's different. Yeah. But I think that you can adjust to it. You get the open practice. I'd love to see the percentages at the Final Four with the middle of the floor, the middle of the field set up, if it's really that different from what we've seen. But it was hard when it was in the end zone. You're looking at that like this is, you never have seen that before. What gym have you ever shot where there's just that much empty space?
Yeah, it's very strange. And you throw in the fact that none of these teams play with the ball that they play with in March Madness now, that Wilson ball, which everyone, either they complain it's too pumped up or it's too rubbery.
I will say the pumped up thing I get. But you could also, if I'm a player, I would have no problem going to the refs and being like, man, this thing is juice. Can we let a little air out of this thing? And as long as the other team agrees, I don't see why that's a problem. I wanted to feel it because there's been so much made of that ball. So in Spokane, I went and I grabbed one of them. They do feel very similar to the old Wilson ball. And I like the Wilson ball that we played with before. The color is way different. The
color is brighter.
It is. It's like a bright orange, whereas it used to be more of a brownish orange.
It looks like a recess ball, and I think that's why people think it looks bad.
I agree. It looks like a ball that you were out there with, like, the really rough, rigid...
outside
like the
ball,
camp ball. Camp ball for outside. That's
it's like
it
uneven.
Like.
It bounces wrong. Every once in a while, you get it and it bounces sideways. Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't feel bad to me. I know a lot's been made of that thing. And it is dumb that we don't have a uniform basketball. It always cracked me up when you'd play Wisconsin in the Bo Ryan.
The Rock.
Era. Yeah. Well, no, they had Sterling. The Rock was different. I played with The Rock a couple times. Sterling was like a brick. This thing was hard. It was slippery. It was, I don't know, Bo Ryan must have had like an exclusive deal with Sterling. Because everybody else was, you know, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, maybe The Rock. There was
I don't
one
like
other
the Nike
one.
Balls. Like Carolina plays with the Nike balls, like in the Dean Dome. They're like
very
almost
grippy.
Squishy. Yeah, right. Like when they hit the rim, they kind of just like sit on it.
And then you move up and you play with the NBA ball, and the NBA ball is like slick until it gets wet. But once you get used to the NBA ball, it's good. It takes a while, especially when you come from the Nike. But it is dumb that we're not just like, dude, you use this. Use the Wilson ball.
I can see some of the guys in warmups, like when they were shooting layups and stuff, it seems like they were taking a little bit off of the ball, the new ball that they use. Like everything's like a little bit different. You almost have to do like the math in real time there. I don't like doing predictions, Robbie, but last time we were in Phoenix, we got the two best teams all season long. Gonzaga played UNC for the national championship. Right now, the two best teams all season long, in my opinion, UConn and Purdue, they're both there. Like I said, I don't want to do predictions, but if we do get both these teams, how excited would that be to see Zach Edey go against Kling Kong?
No, I mean, that would be the ultimate. And I think that's what we're going to get. I would be surprised if we don't have UConn-Purdue, but that would be must-see TV. And UConn has certainly played unbelievable basketball, but Purdue has too. You know, they're the two teams that I feel like have separated themselves all year long as being the best teams in college basketball. And you know, the upsets are great and they're great stories, but I feel like for this NCAA tournament, it's been a good amount of upsets that have allowed us to have some really high level matchups in the second weekend and maybe even into the national championship.
And those are the best kind of tournaments, in my opinion. Like 2017 was a great example. South Carolina and Oregon kind of similar mirror, you know, what we see with NC State, you know, getting there, Alabama getting there. But if the two best teams play for the national championship, that's a win for everybody. And very excited to see how it all plays out. We'll see you in Phoenix. Appreciate you coming on the show, Robbie. And, you know, good luck to the Purdue Boilermakers. I'm excited to watch them play in the Final Four. Finally, we did it.
Yes. Finally, the weight's been lifted. Thanks, dude. Good talking to you.
Of course, man. Appreciate you. Say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tournament. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. If you go to FanDuel Sportsbook right now, they have some great specials for the Final Four. That's right. We finally made it to the Final Four, and you can bet on the exact matchups and get big payouts. So if you go to FanDuel Sportsbook right now, now is the time to use that $200 on point spreads, money lines. You can even pick who's going to win it all. And the wait is over, North Carolina. FanDuel is officially live in the Tar Heel State. Just visit FanDuel.com/OSP and bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit theringer.com/RG. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles. Because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Joining us now on One Shining Podcast, he is the man responsible for taking the Alabama Crimson Tide to the first Final Four in program history. He is the head coach. He is Nate Oates. Coach Oates, thanks for being on the show.
Appreciate you having me on. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Coach, you hurt my heart as a Carolina guy. I got to be honest. We were talking off air a little bit about it, but you guys have been playing some great basketball. And the mantra of this team, I saw you in the postgame press conference, was next. And you said it was next play. Can you talk about how this team has been able to have that next play mentality on this run to the Final Four?
Yeah, I thought it hadn't really been there. And I called Saban. I called a few people. We were
good person kinda, to call.
Yeah, not bad. I think. One of the better coaches in modern sports history. So it's nice he's on the same campus. His office is right there for 5 years here. So he had retired, had a little extra time on his hands, thought maybe he'd help me. He's always been grateful. So we talked, and he watches all our games, and he was like, man, your guys got to move to the next play. Like they let, you know, the Florida game, they went on a run. And so we had tried to tell him, but I just said, guys, like our word's going to be next. Like just the next action within the play, get to the next action within the game, get to the next play. Like quit whining to the refs about calls, quit moping that you missed a shot, quit celebrating when you played great. Like it's all of it. Like if it's going good, it has zero effect on the next play. If it's going bad, zero, just get to the next play and give everything you got in the next play and focus in. And I think our guys finally clicked and we're getting to the next play, and we've been pretty good playing to the next play for these last four games.
There was a lot of talk going into the tournament. You guys, everyone looks at KenPom these days and they tell you about your KenPom stats, and they talked about the defense. Alabama's defense wasn't up to par to be a team that could make a run. But in the tournament, you know, North Carolina, I watched them live in person play your defense. I watched Clemson live in person play your defense. Defense looks pretty good right now. Can you talk about that shift and how much you guys have gotten better, especially with Estrada and Griffin being able to guard on the ball with some of these guards in the tournament?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think we were as locked in as we needed to be on the defensive end throughout the year, and that cost us some of the losses we had. And, you know, we kept telling our guys, you know, the three years previous to this year, we were ranked in the top three of the country in defensive efficiency. Those two years. Those 2 years that we were top three were when we made Sweet 16 runs. We won the SEC regular season, won the tournament both years. I mean, we won big. So we kept telling these guys, like, we can't be poor defensively and expect to win big. Well, we weren't great defensively. It cost us an SEC regular season. It cost us an SEC tournament. better late than never, but we're starting to figure it out. So I think if you go look, and if you look at the four games and take away the last 10 minutes or so of that Charleston game after we got up 31, obviously, ideally, you play the whole 40. Human nature, it's hard when you get up 31 on a team. And we got outscored by 18 since we got up 31 in the last, whatever it was, 8-10 minutes of that game. You take away that stretch, our defense has been really good. Top 20 in the country. So, you know, if you put the number one offense, and we don't, UConn's got the number one offense, but we had it until Reitzel got hurt. We had it the bulk of the year. You know, I told our guys, if you can put the number one offense or a top three offense, which is what we are right now, if you can put a top three offense together with a top 20 defense, you can make a Final Four run. Like we've got to buckle down and really get our defense where it needs to be. And I think we've done that. So while you look at KenPom, it's going to give you the whole 30 plus games. Why don't you just look at the last four games minus the stretch we got up 31 on Charleston and see where that is. That's probably a little more like what we're guarding now.
Yeah, you guys are topped.
You guys top by both ways, offense and defense. Number one offense, I think number four defense. They're a handful on both sides of the ball. So we've got our hands full Saturday. But we're playing a lot better now than we were throughout the year.
You mentioned UConn. There is a story that I think you're probably going to have to be asked about multiple times, so I'll go ahead and ask about it. But there is a connection between you and the Hurley family, obviously, and it goes back to E.C. Matthews, when a guy that you coached back at Romulus High School was getting recruited by Rhode Island, and Dan Hurley, Bobby Hurley, hires you onto his Buffalo staff. You go on to be the head coach there, get the big win over DeAndre Ayton that everybody remembers from the NCAA tournament. But the connection to the Hurley family, how cool is it to that be your way into college basketball? And now you have a Final Four matchup against Dan Hurley at UConn.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby hired me, and Bobby got in with Danny. Danny hired Bobby. You know, they come from unbelievable basketball pedigree. Their dad's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they're like, you know, their respect for high school coaches is a lot better. You know, higher. I shouldn't say better. A lot bigger than maybe a lot of Division I coaches. So I was fortunate to get in with them as a high school guy, and now to be coaching against Dan. And we're doing it in Bobby's hometown too. Shoot, he's head coach right. in the state. It's in Phoenix. Not sure that me, Danny, and Bobby will be having dinner Friday night or anything for the game, but it is cool. It would be better if I was coaching against Danny and he didn't have the squad he had. Like, so I am coaching against him. The spread doesn't look so good for us right now, but we'll have a fun night. He might, you know, look, I can guarantee you one thing. He's going to be on the refs. His teams are going to play hard, and it'll be an intense game. It's just, you know, I wish his team wasn't so good.
Yeah, it'll be very intense. He is a very intense individual, but you guys are, it's cool to see high school coaches. I mean, Kevin Keats as well at NC State from Hargrave Military Academy, right? All guys who were high school coaches kind of cut their teeth in high school. Now they're coaching at the highest level. I want to ask you about blue collar points, right? This is something that I think the casual fan might not know about Alabama basketball. You were doing this at Buffalo before, but you got the hard hat. I saw the Dakota Durant, Grant Nelson, who I learned a lot about his game in the Carolina game, wearing the hard hat. What is blue collar points, and what is that about your team, like, you know, that kind of sets the tone for how they play?
I mean, we've always played fast, but I didn't want to be like Hollywood. Like, I want to, yeah, I'm kind of a Midwest guy that's tough. We play fast because it's most efficient, not because it's Hollywood. Like, we wanted a base of our program to be built on toughness, blue collar. So we at Buffalo my second year, we weren't blue collar enough. We didn't look, so we tried to changed the whole thing. So we came up with a system that kind of like hustle points, like, you know, it's deflections, rebounds, floor dives, you know, great screens, charges you take in, like all this stuff that maybe doesn't show up in a box score, like no points are charted. So, and then we total it. And at the end of the game, we've got this hard hat that we started in Buffalo, got a real construction hard hat, put the Buffalo Bulls horns on it, and now down here at Alabama, we got the script A on one, and we give it to whoever wins it, take a picture, it goes up on the wall, and they've really bought in. I mean, the guys are hyped as to who gets it and who. So it's a way to celebrate winning culture, winning plays that aren't necessarily points. Everybody celebrates points. It's a way to celebrate stuff that goes into winning that's not scoring the basketball.
Yeah. And you guys have some great stuff going on with that sort of stuff. I enjoyed the celebrations. You also hired a third party analytics team for this NCAA tournament. I haven't heard a lot of people do that. Can you just speak to why you would do that and how it kind of helps, you know, as best you can scout these teams throughout the tournament? Because I know that's the hardest turnaround, these quick scouts.
I don't know what your following is, but maybe you can help set the record straight on this, Tate.
Yeah, please.
What do you got, like 100 million out there that you can
let? I hope so. We'll see if we can find them.
So they're really good. It's called SSA, Michael Schwimmer, Jacob Cohn. Like, they're great, but we did not hire them for the tournament. They've been working with us for 2 years now.
Okay, there you go.
Before that, we had another analytics company that came out here. They're great too, HDI. Then they've gotten a lot of people. So there's multiple analytics companies out there. We've gone with the SSA because they're good. They're very, like, they're embedded. Like, here, I mean, you know, Schwimmer comes out multiple trips. He was embedded with us the whole time. So we did not just hire them for the tournament. They've been working with us all year. They worked on putting the roster together last year. They worked with us last year. We do it because I'm an analytics guy. I believe in analytics. They're super smart. They've got the models. I don't know how to do all the coding. I can use the information they give me and apply it to the team, but I don't know how to get the information they give me. So I think, shoot, every NBA team's got an analytics department now. They've got multiple people in it. We've got a director of analytics, Adam Bowman, on staff, but there's, you know, third party. These guys got all the models and everything like that we can't do. So they've been great. They help us put scouting reports together. They do. Their hands are on almost every aspect of the program, every aspect we can get them involved with.
Yeah, let's set the record straight, not just for the tournament. I saw that as a headline, so there you go.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I don't know who put that out there, and I went back and looked at my press conference. I didn't quite say that, but I'm used to the media misinterpreting my quote, so we're good with that, but I'm going to set this one straight.
I like when you set the record straight. One last thing I want to ask you about Mark Sears quickly. He had a moment in that Clemson game. He runs down the court and he said, "I really do this to the crowd." He really has been playing some great basketball right now. He's taking about 10 threes a game. That's up from the regular season, shooting about 45%. Have you told him to shoot more, or is he just making more moments happen? And how much of a relationship do you have with him on the floor? It looks like you guys have a nice little rapport.
Yeah, I haven't told him to shoot more. I tell him to shoot as many as he can all the time. So, like, you know, I didn't. When did he said this? He said, "I really do this."
He really looked at the crowd. He hit a big corner three and he said, "I really do this."
He hit a corner three?
Yeah, it was. They threw a zone at you guys and he kind of.
I didn't realize which one he did it. I was wondering if it was the one he hit from the logo, because that would have been inappropriate. Like, but no, he got going. Look, in that game, I think he missed his first four threes. And he's human. Everybody got a little frustrated. He came to me. They're really, you know, like, they're really taking me. I said, "Mark, relax."
Right.
Miss four open threes. You're good. They're not taking you out that mad. You'll be all right. You're going to start making them. You always get to your 20. I promise you, you're going to be fine. Like, any thing near sleepwalks to 20. Next thing you know, he hits seven threes in the second half. He catches fire. He could be scoreless, like, through the first 30 minutes of the game and end up with 20. Like, I mean, he'll just explode, like, in a short amount of time sometimes. So he's super talented. He works really hard. His leadership's been through the roof for this tournament. His defense has been better. We've had multiple guys step up in different regards. I think Nick Pringle's leadership's been great. Different guys, you know, from Mo Diabate in the Grand Canyon game to Nelson in the Carolina game to Jaren Stevenson was huge in the Clemson game. But Sears has been pretty big in all the games, as he's been throughout the course of the year. So now, I haven't told him to shoot more. I he better not pass up any open threes ever, to be honest with you. So as many open threes as the opponent will give him, he needs to take every one of them.
Well, I hope everybody gets healthy. I hope Reitzel can play in the Final Four. We're looking forward to watching you guys in Phoenix. Good luck in Phoenix, Coach. And, you know, I know it's going to be tough going against that UConn team, but it should be a fun game. And I hope you guys show up. And if Grant Nelson plays like he did against my Tar Heels, I think you guys are going to be okay, Coach.
Yeah, that'd be great. I saw a stat. He was like one of four people that put up it was like him, Shaq, Tim Duncan, and Channing Frye to put up 24, 12, and right. 5.
Yeah, pretty good company. Yeah,
not bad
pretty
company.
Good.
Yeah, if you have the pro careers those guys had, he'll be all right.
Yes, sir. Well, appreciate you coming on the show, Coach Oates, and we'll make sure we'll set the record straight. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. All right, roll tide.
There you have it. Nate Oates, head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. We appreciate him coming on the show. We also appreciate Robbie Hummel. Unfortunately, Robbie Hummel, he was supposed to play golf with myself and Kyle. We're going to play the PGA Tour TPC Scottsdale, the Champions Course on Sunday. It was going to be a nice, relaxing weekend. And then Purdue had to go and make the Final Four for the first time since 1980. Now, Robbie Hummel is being called by everybody that has ever been affiliated with the university. So it's a shout out to him. It is a tough look for us, but we're going to have fun in Phoenix regardless. We appreciate Robbie and Coach Oates coming on the show. Just a few quick shout outs before we get out of here. I want to shout out the 2024 Final Four, by the way. It was built on the shoulder of giants like Edie, Kling, and Burns, and the lone guard with the giant heart, Mark Sears. So I just wanted to shout out those four guys. It is an incredible accomplishment to make it to the Final Four. Coach K told us it is basically like winning a championship. He said he won a championship back in 2022. We remember this. All four teams, they're all champions. Congratulations to them. I talked a little bit about this with Robbie Hummel, but there are a lot of parallels to 2017 in Phoenix. The two best teams all season long, they are here, Purdue, UConn, similar to Gonzaga, UNC that year. Also, two teams who are tough, got hot at the right time, similar to South Carolina and Oregon that year. When we're talking about Alabama and talking about NC State, and shout out to NC State and Connecticut. They are the first two teams. They make history with both men's and women's teams in the Final Four. So congratulations. Kudos to both programs. If you're a TV ratings guy, we have a lot of those in sports media. The Elite Eight delivered. It was the most watched Elite Eight in 5 years, led by NC State and Duke with more than 15 million viewers. So for all the hubbub about, the men's tournament doesn't matter, nobody's watching, nobody cares. Well, the numbers say differently, and a lot of people are watching. A lot of people are tuning in, and it has been a really, really awesome tournament so far. We're excited to see what's going to happen once we get to Phoenix. And at the start of the tournament, we did a nice characters list. We love characters here. Characters count on this show, and we did our top 25 characters and then some. We had about 35 in total. Had some honorable mentions as well, but Kyle was, doing the math here beforehand. And Kyle, we have seven characters that are left in the tournament, correct?
We've got seven if you count Bill Murray and Ian Eagle, and I think they're characters in my book. So I think we've got seven for the Final Four. That is not bad at all.
That's not bad at all. And if you remember the list, number one on our list, he was 1A, not 1B. 1B was TV Teddy. We will pour one out for TV Teddy. I feel like he should be in the Final Four, but he only got to ref one game in the NCAA tournament. That was the Longwood-Houston game. So a pretty inconsequential affair for TV Teddy. He would be great calling a game against Dan Hurley and whoever he's going up against, but no TV Teddy, but we do have Dan Hurley. So 1A is still in the building. Caitlin Clark is still in the building. She
I guess there's eight then. There's eight, yeah, if we count Caitlin for the for both tournaments.
We're counting Caitlin because she just beat LSU. They get to the Final Four. They play UConn on Friday night. So we get Paige Buckets versus Caitlin Clark. That is going to be a great game. UConn fans, they are not afraid to let you know how they feel about someone. They love Paige Beckers. And in turn, that has led them to hating Caitlin Clark. So that is going to be a fun matchup on Friday between those two. So Caitlin Clark, number four on the characters list. She's still in it. Number five, Zach Edey is going to be in it. And we talked to Robbie Hummel ad nauseum. I love that term for Brad Underwood. I'm going to start using it more as a bit of a joke before it turns into reality. But Zach Edey, number five, he's going to be in it. We're excited to see him in person. Nate Oates was number 16 on the list. He is in the Final Four, and he was just on our show. So next year, Kyle, we're going to have to bump him up if he continues to be a friend of the program, because we appreciate Nate Oates taking the time out. Yeah, great suits. The guy knows how to dress. He knows how to coach basketball. Ian Eagle, like you said, DJ Burns is going to be, he has become America's sweetheart. First it was Meg Ryan, then it was DJ Burns, and DJ Burns is just continuing to win. So
people forget to him. Kyle's guy from the beginning, and I've always been partial to NC State, but I can't take the credit for it. You saw this man and you were like, Kyle, I know you like to pick your guys, but I need to point you in this direction. And I saw him a long time ago when you showed me, and I was like, yep, that is my guy. And it feels good to be on that, in the first car of that train. That's nice.
Yeah, you deserve to be on that train.
You too. Pat yourself on the back, buddy. Thank you. You know my type of guy, and you nailed it.
And America fell in love with him in real time. And I personally, NC State, a lot of people want me to hate NC State, but I'm a public school kid. I love public schools. I was excited to see NC State get over the hump. Their fans are very excited. My sister-in-law's sister will be there at the Final Four. So I got family that's going to be out there. My cousin Matt and his wife Melissa, they're both NC State grads. They're out here in Los Angeles right now. They're very fired up about NC State being in the Final Four. So I got family that are, that have vested interest in this. And I'm excited to see all the Wolfpackers in person. And, you know, you got the Boilermakers taking on the Wolfpack. That's going to be a fun game. UConn, Alabama is going to be a fun game. Like I said, we're not in the predictions business. We're in the reactions business. So we're going to be doing a lot of reactions live from the Final Four. Myself, Kyle, J. Kyle Mann, don't forget the J. He will be out there with us. We will be doing reaction shows after the game Saturday night and Monday night. And also a special appearance from Kevin O'Connor. That's right, KOC's first Final Four. He will be in Phoenix as well. We're going to be doing Through the Ringer on Monday, the two of us reacting to the Final Four after the game as well. So
Harry's popping up probably.
Oh, God, yes. I forgot about this. We're going to Harry and Ken's land. This is their kingdom, their fiefdom, whatever you want to call it. This is where they belong and this is where they thrive and they're alive and living well. We're potentially going to have to go to Harry's house on Friday if we can't get into our Airbnb.
I got to see what's going on in that house. I think I've only seen that one room and I'm not sure if there's anything else in that room from his videos. So I want to poke around if he lets me.
I want to poke around. I just want to see what they got going on. I think that's the bigger conversation point there. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of friends of the program are going to be in the building. If you are there in Phoenix, OSP will be boots on the ground, and we are around. So if you see us, say hello. We love talking college basketball. We love talking to the friends of the program. We are a small, mighty group of college basketball faithful. We care about the good of the game, and we care about the characters that count. So we are around. Say hello. We'll talk back, and we're going to have a fun time in Phoenix. Appreciate everybody tuning in. This has been the OSP Final Four preview. The next time you hear from us, we will be in Phoenix reacting to the games that just happened on Saturday night. So again, appreciate everybody tuning in, and we will talk to you, and we will see you on Saturday night, live from Phoenix, live from the Final Four. Best time of the year, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 533-42 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.